You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, today we will continue and finish our topic for the last couple of days. Today we'll make three on the plans of the National Education Association, the United States Department of Education, and the Socialist Change Agents for our children's education, their future, your future. And, of course, how they use your children in their schools to spy on you and the community in order to get the information they need to alter your behavior and attitudes and bring about their socialist utopian state. You don't want to miss a bit of this, folks. And if you have someone who has school-age children, even though they may have missed the first two broadcasts, call them up. Tell them to tune in to 101.1 FM Eager. Or to 9.955 megahertz shortwave worldwide. Don't go away. Make sure you have pen and paper, and I'll be right back.
Nazi 1994. I'd vote for Reich. I'd vote for Reich. I'd vote for Reich. CFR controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao.
Well, folks, I hope you're all ready to end our discussion that began 2 days ago, because we're going to finish it up today. Again, I want to tell you that some of this came from a subscription magazine called Relevance, which only contains one story each issue. They do excellent research. An awful lot of it came from the research of Dennis Cuddy, Ph.D., who has been a tireless researcher into the high-level machinations of the world's power elite, especially in the realm of education. He was a former teacher in the public school system and at the university level. He also served as a senior associate in the U.S. Department of Health, the United States Department of Education for 6 years during the Reagan administration. He has a Ph.D. in American history, and so he knows what he's talking about. Also interspersed in all of this is my own research and the research of those people who belong to my organizations, CAGI, the Intelligence Service, and Veritas News Service, and who collect information from all over the world and send it to me. Every day I get a flood of mail that we have to go through, and about 400 emails each day, not to mention the phone calls, faxes, and everything else that we get here. That's our business information. So, if you've got your pen and paper by your side, here we go. In order for students to be guided in certain career directions based upon society's needs, student profiles are an important part of certain school-to-work initiatives, and employers will have continual access to these profiles as part of a permanent file on all individuals who are now considered to be lifelong learners. In communist China, the file is called a dangan and describes the value of the individual to the state. Unfortunately, today, ladies and gentlemen, there seem to be similarities between school to work in the United States and the dangan in communist China. Critics, in fact, have compared Tucker's own human resources development, or HRDP, to the Chinese communist dangan, a file describing the value of the individual to the state. In a New York Times article, Personal File and Worker Yoked for Life, dated March 16, 1992, it says that the dangan contains political evaluations that affect career prospects. Tucker's HRDP does not advocate that political evaluations be included in the fully computerized integrated labor market database he proposes. However, he does say the cradle to grave. Wow, where have you heard that before? This is the first open admission. That's a direct quote right out of the HRDP. Cradle to grave. HRDP system is, quote, outcome and performance based, is for everyone, and would contain their qualifications. People's qualifications could include whether they receive a certificate of initial mastery, called CIM, which could include such potentially politically correct categories as involved citizen, perhaps whether they've performed community service, constructive thinker, collaborative contributor, boy is that loaded, understands diversity, and interprets human experience, end quote, which are all actual categories on Oregon's CIM, which is the Certificate of Mastery, Certificate of Initial Mastery, I should say. Tucker's HRDP would also include everyone's employment histories for their entire lifetime, as everyone would be, quote, lifelong learners, end quote, if not lifelong workers. Remember, I told you this years ago. Got all kinds of mail telling me I was a kook, that this could never happen, that they could never make the school the center of the community and force everybody to go to school from birth to grave, from cradle to grave. But that's exactly what they're going to do. And that's exactly what's outlined in all of this stuff. That's exactly what they say, right out of their own mouth, folks. I didn't make any of this up. In Mark Tucker's post-election letter to Hillary Clinton, outlining his human resources development program, he wrote of the need to create an, quote, employment service, end quote. And this is what he said, quote, all available frontline jobs, whether public or private, must be listed in it. The employment service, by law, this provision must be carefully designed to make sure that employers will not be subject to employment suits based on the data produced by this system. If they are subject to such suits, they will not participate, end quote. Of course, Tucker's concern about lawsuits suggests that there will be personal information or evaluations included in everyone's files regarding their qualifications and employment histories, and I'm going to tell you right now, there will be a political category. Regarding the Chinese communist Dangan, students and workers are never allowed to see their files. But as the quoted New York Times article states, quote, they live all their lives with their files looming over them, end quote. Similar to Tucker's HRDP, the Dangan is kept, quote, on virtually everyone except peasants, end quote, and is filled with, quote, performance evaluations, end quote, and stays with the individual, quote, for a lifetime, end quote. How would you like to be shackled with that? Well, your children are going to be, if you don't do something about it. If you've got National Education Association teachers and administrators in your schools, your children are going to be taught to be good little socialist human resources in the New World Order. You can translate that as, quote, slaves, end quote. The article goes on to say, quote, a file is opened on each urban citizen when he or she enters elementary school, and it shadows the person throughout life moving on to high school, college, and employer. The Dangan affects the promotions and job opportunities, and it is difficult to escape from because any prospective employer is supposed to examine an applicant's Dangan before making a hiring decision. The Dangan is part of a web of social controls that ensure order in China. Regarding the use of the word web in the article, it is worth noting that in Tucker's letter to Hillary Clinton, he wrote, quote, we think the great opportunity you have is to remold the entire American system for human resources development. What is essential is that we create a seamless web of opportunities to develop one's skills that literally extends from cradle to grave and is the same system for everyone, young and old, poor and rich, worker and full-time student, end quote. The term seamless web also appears in a February 1994 UNESCO publication entitled Culture and Development, a Study, which described, quote, human development, end quote, and stated, quote, development is a seamless web, end quote, and, quote, the way in which education trains people for work is a criterion of its relevance, end quote. Pursuant, ladies and gentlemen, to the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, on October 1, 1997, President Clinton inaugurated the National Directory of New Hires. As the New York Times reported on September 22, 1997, the director is not just for welfare recipients. That is, the directory is not just for welfare recipients. Here's what it says, quote, it will record basic information, including names, addresses, social security numbers, and wages to be reported every 3 months for everyone hired after October 1st for a full or part-time job by any employer of any size, end quote. It has begun. Ostensibly designed to facilitate the tracking down of deadbeat dads who move out of state to avoid paying child support, the directory just happens to be tailor-made for the school-to-work planners, since it creates a file on American workers which is updated every 3 months. The New York Times adds that much more information is likely to end up in the files. Before the program has even begun, some states were already requiring the filing of telephone numbers, dates of birth, driver's license numbers, and health insurance information. And if you don't think workers' evaluations are far behind, you'd better think again. The New York Times also quoted privacy expert Robert M. Gellman. Quote, "The government is creating a gigantic new database with very broad uses and very little attention paid to the protection of personal privacy," end quote. Gellman predicted that Congress would expand the number of people authorized to use the new directory, just as it has done with other, quote, protected, end quote, information over the years. Remember what they said when they passed the Social Security law, making the Social Security tax? They said it was voluntary, and that the number would never be used for identification or for any other purpose other than Social Security. You see how they lie, ladies and gentlemen? As an example of how school-to-work federal funds come into a state, North Carolina is receiving $30 million in school-to-work monies from the United States Department of Labor. It goes to the state's Workforce Preparedness Commission, appointed by Governor James B. Hunt, Jr., until recently vice chairman of NCEE, and then down to the local level. Politics can play a role in who is appointed to the local partnership councils, whose plans have to be approved by regional workforce development boards and also at the state level. Thus, there really is no local control at all, period, end of subject. Out of your hands. School to Work, Job Ready is not a voluntary program, as all students will have to participate in it regardless of what they have told you. According to the Governor's Commission on Workforce Preparedness, quote, the Commission proposes the elimination of the general track requiring all students to be enrolled in a job-ready program, end quote. They don't care what the student wants. They don't care what's good for the student. Students will be channeled into what is good for the state or business. Period. Once your child is channeled, that ends all other hopes that he or she or you as parents may have ever had for your children. Also, many will find objectionable the Commission's statement that, quote, companies involved in school to work will have the opportunity to grow their own employees, and the Job Ready system will ensure that every North Carolina employer is an equal partner with parents in the education of young people, end quote. The Commission report goes on to state that during grades 6 through 8, all students will develop career plans. The program here is that many students 11 to 13 years of age do not know what their careers will be. Although Job Ready permits students to change their career plans after the 8th grade now, won't be that way in the future, many students will be reluctant to do this because they would fall behind other students of the same age who were not changing career paths. Because it means to graduate, they would have to demonstrate proficiency in their new career field. That means starting again at square one. Even proponents of school to work occasionally admit that their system is a thinly veiled form of social engineering. Well, what else could it be? Prepared by, implemented by, and put into action and supervised by Marxist, Socialist, National Education Association teachers and administrators. On July 19, 1995, the California State Senator Bill Leonard wrote a letter to California State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Delane Easton, a supporter of President Clinton's national education standards. This letter concerned the statements of Douglas Renwick, a member of the state's School to Career Curriculum Framework and Criteria Committee. According to Senator Leonard, Renwick had made the following comment at a recent committee meeting, quote, "By design, we are doing social engineering. We're using education to consciously invent the future of our culture and society. Let's get to it and acknowledge what we're doing," end quote. Senator Leonard went on to write that, quote, Mr. Renwick also stated that Hitler's Nazis gave social engineering a bad name and implied that if good people were the engineers, then social engineering would be acceptable, end quote. Isn't that strange? I'll bet you Hitler's social engineers said something almost exactly, word for word, the same thing. You see, Hitler was a socialist. Nazi means National Socialist German Workers' Party. If you don't believe me, look it up. Hitler socialized Germany. Hitler was a socialist. Socialists are Nazis. Socialism is not liberal like you've been taught, ladies and gentlemen. Instead of liberalizing the world in the great liberal ideas of the founding fathers of this country, that all men are created equal and possess at birth certain unalienable creator-endowed natural rights, socialism wants to take you backwards into the enslavement of the past. You see, ladies and gentlemen, socialism, where you create a nation or world of victims who must be taken care of by Big Brother or Big Daddy the state, is the same old medieval serfdom where the helpless victim serfs are given a piece of land and certain benefits of the landowner or landlord, and they become indentured, indebted, and enserfed for the rest of their lives. It's no different. It's feudalism is what it is. The only thing, there'll only be one feudal lord, and that will be Big Brother. It's about time that all of you sat down and started thinking about things instead of listening to these chronic liars, deceivers, and manipulators and believing what they tell you. They will lead you down the garden path. They will give you a beautiful pair of rose-colored glasses, and they will whisper lies in your ear until you realize all of a sudden that you have stepped off the edge of a cliff and are falling to your doom. And while that's happening, they will yell down to you, "Don't worry, everything's okay. We've made arrangements to catch you at the bottom." Liars to the end. Liars, that's right. If you're a socialist, I'll call you a liar to your face. It's the truth. Socialism sucks, ladies and gentlemen, and so do socialists. They will destroy you. They will destroy this nation. Senator Leonard then succinctly described the problem and solution by stating, quote, "It is impossible to support school-to-career reforms if those implementing the changes are motivated by social engineering. It does not matter whether the engineers are Nazis or kindergarten teachers." And more often than not, the two are the same. "The idea that a government bureaucracy can better determine the direction of your child's life than the parents is frightening. Makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck and a chill go down my spine. To think that they could ever get their grimy hands on my little children. They never will because I homeschool. And if they ever challenge that, I have the Supreme Court decision that says the business of educating the children is the responsibility and the right of the parents." It is Big Brother, ladies and gentlemen. Big Brother. Big Brother. Big Brother. Big Brother. You ever seen that gorilla in the movies standing up, huge, beating his chest, King Kong? That's Big Brother. It is Big Brother, and it is being funded by your tax dollars right now. Schools ought to teach all students, first, more important than anything else in this entire world, how to read. Because if a child does not learn how to read, anything else you may teach them will come to absolutely nothing in this modern world. First, reading. First, primary, of utmost, number one importance over anything else whatsoever. Reading. Reading. Next is how to write. 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 And then how to calculate, do mathematics, and then analyze and think originally through problems. With these skills, ladies and gentlemen, and foundational knowledge, students will be prepared to enter any occupation or career they choose. And if you teach them the correct and proper, the real history of the world and of this country, they will be prepared to maintain their freedom and to make sure that it is never taken from them. To predetermine their occupational skill or career paths is wrong, it's dangerous, and it's ugly. Very, very ugly. But there are people in your school, wherever you live, who are doing their very best to implement these plans. And every time you see someone engaged in that, if you check their credentials, you'll find that they belong to the National Education Socialist. National Education Association. Socialist. Marxist socialist from beginning all the way down the line, all the way through history. And I can back that up with their own words, their own writings, their own pamphlets, their own training programs, their own books. The state of North Dakota has been involved in the federal school-to-work program for 3 years, and its labor commissioner, Craig Hagan, has resigned from that state's school-to-work management team after serving on it from its creation 3 years ago. Why did he resign? Because he couldn't accept what the federal government was forcing his state to do with school-to-work. He asked, quote, "Are we preparing children to live as whole human beings? Or just employees? When did the schoolhouse become the job training center of America?" End quote. In June 1996, Oklahoma's elected labor commissioner, Brenda Renau, advised Governor Frank Keating that Oklahoma should not accept federal school-to-work monies. She wrote in the Daily Oklahoman, September 19, 1996, quote, "School-to-work teachers now spend less time on academics as students spend more time outside the classroom getting real-world learning experiences." And at least one Oklahoma school-to-work document specifically states that those more traditional teachers who prove reluctant to go along with the new order will need to find new work. The whole concept of a planned labor force being created through legislative fiat is absurd. But those who have read Goals 2000 and the School to Work Opportunities Act know the game plan is very real. End quote. Another Oklahoman speaking out against school to work is Tony Maggio, a former senior vice president and corporate chief technical officer of Seagate Technology and a former vice president to engineering for Control Data Corporation. In a recent article on School to Work, Maggio wrote, quote, "Why should businessmen glibly sign on to a radical education approach when asked to join a School to Work partnership?" End quote. He then suggests, quote, "Questioning those who ask for your support for a new radical education program, what actual evidence exists to indicate the new change will work better than the prior systems and methods that worked before? Show me the prototype results. Will the changes be carefully introduced into selected environments and results monitored, or will they be implemented system-wide across the board and hope for the best?" End quote. To not ask such critical questions, he suggests, quote, is to act irresponsibly and to have business abrogate its social obligations, deny its competitive heritage, and become an active partner in the continued demise of our education system, end quote. Tony Maggio's article is being distributed by the Oklahoma Council on Public Affairs. You can contact Brandon Dutcher at the OCPA at this number, 405-843-8255. 405-843-9212. That's 405-843-9212. That's in Oklahoma City. School to work. School to work, ladies and gentlemen, will involve the total restructuring and nationalization of American education, whereby schools are turned into job training centers so that Americans can compete in the global economy of an interdependent world. Remember what I've been telling you? Some of you think I'm nuts. Well, I'm not nuts, folks. If you live during the next 20 years, you're going to see it all come to pass right before your eyes. You will watch the enslavement of America. If you love your children, is that the future that you're going to give them? The internationalization of American education, if all of this is successful, will, of course, soon follow. It must follow, because the goal is a totalitarian socialist one world government. In a February 24, 1997 address to the American Council on Education, United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan stated, quote, "If the United Nations is responsible for contributing to the promotion of education, I submit that educators, too, have certain responsibilities toward the United Nations. Through education, we can cultivate a citizenry prepared to thrive in the knowledge-based, interdependent society of the future. National security and national interests can no longer be thought of in narrowing terms. We have long since passed the point at which a leader, politician, or business person can afford to think in only local terms or assume that there is only one way of doing things. As the world stands poised at the dawn of a new millennium, the United Nations has an indispensable, unique moral authority in world affairs." End quote. You can find that verbatim in the United Nations Chronicle, issue number 1, 1997. If you are not careful, school to work and outcome-based education, educational programs will pave the way toward an ominous techno-feudal world of the future, where your children are slaves, stuck in a slot forever from which there is no escape, in a new world, totalitarian, socialist, utopian order. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Takes a village indeed. Well, we're going to go on a new subject now, and I don't know if I'll finish today. I probably won't, and if not, we'll finish it tomorrow. But I want you to know, folks, you can find this on our webpage at harvest-trust.org. The draconian, unconstitutional measures mandated by the Federal Aviation Administration, which are described in this broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, were the result of people such as Congressman Schumer, Democrat, New York, screaming, yelling at the top of his lungs that it was Nazi militiamen that bombed TWA Flight 800. Security measures put into place in our airports as a result of his and others like him hysteria and hatred of patriots and militia by people like Representative Schumer are still in place, even though the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the National Transportation Safety Board has stated unequivocally that no crime was committed and no bomb was involved. According to the National Transportation Safety Board, a mechanical malfunction caused the crash of TWA Flight 800. Whether it did or not is not the subject of this broadcast, and we will be doing several broadcasts on TWA Flight 800 in the future. We've already done quite a few in the past, but it's a subject that needs to be discussed much more. The only Nazi that reared his ugly head was Congressman Schumer and the rest of his ilk that forced their Hitlerian restrictions upon the American people. Our right to travel, ladies and gentlemen, has been irrevocably compromised. We have lost some of our constitutionally protected creator-endowed natural rights. We are discriminated against if we insist upon our rights with the scarlet letter-like orange sticker placed upon our tickets and baggage, or we are banned from flying. If you just drive into an airport, your car can be searched, ladies and gentlemen, whether they have probable cause or not, against the Constitution, against the protected rights that you have, and nobody's saying a word about it. In the last 2 years, everyone flying on a commercial airline has stepped up to an airline's ticket counter and heard the agent recite a familiar litany. The monologue goes something like this. Has your bag been unattended? Have you accepted gifts from a stranger? Can I see your identification, please? The traveler, already now brainwashed for many years by the big eye in his living room, docilely murmurs answers and produces a driver's license or some equivalent. As a diehard constitutionalist, I believe that we still have an absolute, unfettered, God-given right to travel from point A to point B without permission from the state, in the air, as well as on land. The old, your papers, please routine is a Nazi Gestapo enslavement tactic that it seems Americans have forgotten about. This Nazi procedure of your papers, please, has never been appropriate for our country, and it never will be. I have had occasion to travel a good deal in the last several months, and on those trips I decided to research and test this issue about the necessity for producing identification. I've talked with agents and their supervisors of several major airlines in cities across America and have gradually pieced together a rather complete picture of the real legal situation regarding our right to travel. By the way, folks, I did not write this. This was written under the pseudonym of Betsy Ross. But it's all true. We've checked every single bit of it out. Next, I tested this finding with several airlines. When asked for identification, I produced only my Sam's Club card or my travel agent's ID card or a Costco card. These are all picture IDs, but they are privately issued and do not even have a signature upon them. The airline agents just freaked out and demanded to see some state-issued ID. They routinely told me that, quote, it was federal law, end quote, a blatant lie. The government absolutely required me to cough up an official ID card without which the agent couldn't even think of letting me on this plane. I told the agents that I could not find any federal regulation mandating that type of identification and then asked them to cure my ignorance and please cite the regulation. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, we have also checked. There is no such regulation. But now at this point, individual airline agents have reacted differently. Some called in their supervisor. Those are the wise ones. Alaska Air employees were the most gracious. Northwest agents were the worst. They were rude, belligerent, and hostile brats. So we recommend you don't fly Northwest Airlines. But they all folded every single time when challenged. Every single one of them folded. A particularly nasty Northwest employee marched me all the way back to the electronic detection equipment, made me pass through it a second time, and had the guard thoroughly search my carry-on bag. The same airline agent from hell actually made rude and demeaning remarks to me as we trudged back to the counter, and then she let me on the plane. Alaska Air was much more reasonable. The agent just issued my seat pass and commented that some people seem tenaciously to hold the thought that they have the right to travel without producing government ID, to which I responded, "Yes, amazing, isn't it? And I'm one of them." In Seattle, an agent said, as he handed me my ticket, "You know, if you don't show me any government-issued ID, I can't let you board the plane." I replied, "Yes, I understand, but I didn't, and you are." With a smile, he just said, "Have a nice trip." So I have flown several times using only my meager privately issued picture ID cards. We recommend that every citizen refuse to show identification. No matter what you have to go through, they will fold because there is no such law. And there is no such right of government to forbid you to travel unless they have probable cause, ladies and gentlemen, based upon sworn testimony and a signed affidavit. Every time I use this strategy, I notice that the agent put an orange sticker on my checked bags and also on my seat pass on the ticket. Several agents divulged that this is the policy they are supposed to follow when a person does not show government ID. The bags simply wait in the baggage room until the person presents the matching seat pass as he or she actually boards the plane. Then the bags go on board. On my next trip, I decided to push the envelope even further. When the Alaska Air agent made the usual perfunctory request for identification, I put on my best face, smiled sweetly, and said, "Gee, I'm so sorry, but I just don't have any ID I could show you." To my speechless astonishment, the agent just said, "No problem. Just fill out this simple form and present it to the counter at the airplane gate." I watched as the familiar orange sticker again went on my bag. I repeated the same scenario with Horizon Air on another trip. I have now flown twice without producing any identification whatsoever. Northwest was actually instrumental in advancing my education about this issue. I was so aggravated by the insolent and hostile treatment that their employee gave me, hopefully former employee, after the blistering letter I sent to the company president, that I demanded to see a supervisor on the spot. I then demanded that he produce the relevant federal regulation right now or face personal liability for authorizing an unreasonable search and seizure, dereliction of duty, fraud, conspiracy, civil rights deprivation, and any other legal buzzwords I could think of at that moment which would justify a lawsuit against him personally as well as his employer. Like everyone else, he could not show me any statute or regulations. He even admitted that there are none. However, he did produce a copy of Security Directive 96-05, which the Federal Aviation Agency issued to all airlines in August of 1996. Its wording is very instructive, and it reads as follows. 1. Identify the passenger. Capital A. All passengers who appear to be 18 years of age will present a government-issued picture ID or two other forms of ID, at least one of which must be issued by a government authority. Capital B. The agent must reconcile the name on the ID and the name on the ticket, except as noted below. Now, pay attention to that except as noted below. You see, they know they can't make you do anything, that there is no law that can demand it. And they know they can't make a law that would demand it because it's unconstitutional. You see, you cannot restrict the right of American citizens to travel. Remember, except as noted below, capital C, if the passenger cannot produce identification or it cannot be reconciled to match the ticket, the passenger becomes a, quote, selectee, end quote. Clear all of their luggage as noted in section 6 below. Clear selectees checked and carry-on luggage and suspicious articles discovered by the questions asked. A. If the selectee is on a flight within the 48 continental United States or to Mexico or to Canada, items can be cleared by either of the following methods. 1. Empty the luggage or item and physically search its contents by a qualified screener. Remember the actions taken by Northwest. Or, 2. Bag match. Ensure the bag is not transported on the aircraft if the passenger does not board. Remember all those orange stickers, folks? Capital B. If the selectee is on an international flight, checked luggage, carry-on luggage, and suspect items can be cleared only by the following method. Empty the luggage or item and physically search its contents by qualified screeners. That's it. This document apparently goes on for 10 more pages. But in the 10 more pages, ladies and gentlemen, it does not give them any more authority than what I have just quoted to you now. The Northwest supervisor gave me only the first page, which contains the information that I just read to you. The next time I refused to produce ID and the agent freaked, I told her, quote, just tap up security decision 96-5 on your computer and go to paragraph 1, section capital C. Designate me as a selectee and proceed accordingly. She apparently thought I was an FAA undercover employee because she said that she was tired of you federal guys coming around and literally spying on airline agents, coercing us into lying to people and essentially being the bag man for an activity which has no legal requirement. I told her that I could not agree more. Another airline employee later confirmed that FAA agents often engage in such entrapment activities to make sure that airline agents parrot the government party line about state-issued ID. I also hit pay dirt in a discussion with another, much nicer Northwest agent on the East Coast. In a candid conversation, he told me that FAA personnel had held training sessions with all airline agents in the fall of 1996. Agents were informed directly by the FAA that they absolutely could not bar an American citizen from boarding a plane, even if a passenger refused to produce any identification at all. You see, they know the law, and they know what the Constitution says. But as long as they can scare you and lie to you and manipulate you into conforming to the new police state, you can bet your butt they're going to do it. I understand Delta Airline is facing two large lawsuits because employees twice denied this reality and actually twice kept off a plane a passenger who had only private ID to show. Now, if you'd like to own an airline, courtesy of a judge, just keep flying until somebody says you can't board the plane and then go down and get yourself a top-notch lawyer. I have personally flown Delta with only a private travel card, so I guess they already had their hand slapped. Yet another agent in the Midwest admitted that airline personnel were deliberately and knowingly coercing people into showing government ID by saying, quote, it's the law, end quote, when they know for a fact that it is not, and there is no law. According to him, the reality is that the companies are simply tired of people selling their frequent flyer tickets. The airlines wanted to stem this practice by checking everyone's ID, but knew there would be big problems if they instituted this procedure as a private corporate policy. Now that's just an excuse, folks. That is not the truth. The government used the crash of TWA Flight 800 and the hysteria created by people like Representative Schumer and others to get the public to allow them to take away yet more of your constitutionally protected creator-endowed rights. That is the truth. It was so much more convenient, they claim, to say it was federal law and make the government the scapegoat. So this policy meets the airline's private financial goals and the government's goal of ever increasing social control. And that's the real purpose. Socialism requires total and complete control over your lives from birth until death. If you don't complain, if you don't assert your rights, if every time some little petty, stinking, Hitlerian bureaucrat demands that you do something and says it's the law, every time that you don't demand that they produce that law, you're going to end up a lot quicker than you think as a slave in this socialist New World Order. If no one complains or asserts their rights regarding travel, then another freedom is, poof, presto magico, gone. Of course, our children are watching this happen, and they grow up thinking that the state has both the right to define our identity by issuing documents saying who we are, and also the right to require us to produce them on demand. And it's not true. Of course, television wouldn't have anything to do with that, would it? Every time I watch television, I see shows depicting federal agents, police officers, bureaucrats, real estate agents, and every other little frustrated, insecure Hitler demanding that people conform to laws that don't exist. And of course, on television, they all do it. Thus, teaching our children, and of course all of the adult sheeple of the nation, that that's the way it's supposed to be, when in reality it's not supposed to be that way at all in this country. I told you not long ago, in fact I told you a few years ago, a woman who was a young girl during the years that Hitler was coming to power called me, said she was growing increasingly concerned. She and her parents managed to escape Nazi Germany. She was becoming increasingly concerned because she could see the same programs, the same mannerisms, the same police state being implemented right here in the United States of America, where she thought she was going to live out her life, and her children could live out their life, and her grandchildren could live out their lives, and her great-grandchildren could live out their lives in liberty and freedom. Created equal, endowed with certain unalienable creator endowed natural rights. You've got a lot to think about tonight, folks, don't you? And I hope you think real hard about it. If you have a friend as a socialist, apply the old social magic that used to work in the old days. Anyone who is not an American, who's going about the business of destroying this country from within, socially shun them and tell them the reason why. Doesn't mean you have to curse at them. Doesn't mean you have to hit them or hurt them or do damage to their property. Just stop speaking to them forever. Don't invite them to your home. Don't have anything to do with them whatsoever. Don't do business with them. They'll get the message after a while. But you know what? I don't know if Americans still know how to do that kind of thing anymore. But they better learn. They better relearn. They better start applying it. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And God bless each and every single one of you, even the socialists. Remember, God has a huge bucket that is infinite in its mercy.
all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms. Clinton's gun law passed through. We're here from the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with the power to tax. If you've got a complaint, send us a fax.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. That's the good stuff and do what you're told.
Hillary Salala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land, and Clinton saying take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of the Fourth Reich, Clinton's preparing us for another huge tax. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, create the panic, then rape the nation.
Order.
Crisis creation. Incite black and white. Program agitation.
Don't resist. You're surrounded by the UN in white and blue, the ATF, the men in black, but the one world order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilations. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get him. They came here with the OSS through Operation Paperclip. National ID, debit card? Yeah. Vaccination, biochip, milk carton kits, genetic engineering. Clinton says her health plans for you and your own good. Sure. And Adolf Hitler's Robin Hood. Masonic mind manipulation. Inciting riots, it's crisis creation. Biochip implantation. Vaccinate your kid for UN identification.
This is a test for all of us. So I have today just one simple request. A comprehensive package of health care benefits that are always there and that can never be taken away. Never be taken away. Never be taken away.
Atmospheric. Social illusion. Media hype. Planned confusion. Masonic religion. It's a liar. Got you praying for a Luciferian Messiah. The Illuminati thinks that they're enlightened, that they're to be the gods to Earth, born of incest from the sons of Satan and their sisters in satanic birth. Hidden agenda, Kissinger, Nixon, Ford, and Bill, while your kids out back smoking crack for some cheap thrill. They numbed us down and dumbed us down with fluoride TV drugs, the NEA, and public schools. They've taken your brightest and our best and made them public fools. With managed media, brain-bending lies and stealth, the banksters stole your wealth. Johnson, Bush, Carter, Reagan, Gore, and Dan, they've all been pushing Pike's Masonic Master Plan. Rhodes Scholar Oration. Clinton speaks, then rapes the nation. Luciferian subjugation. New World Order. Illuminati coronation.
You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager. Classic radio, like you always wished it could be. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow at the same time for the Hour of the Time with yours truly, William Cooper.